Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm sure most people have some knowledge of going home drunk at night. Although nowadays it's much, much less popular than it was. It's less, what would I say, usual than it was to see people staggering home simply because it's too dangerous. But I remember it very, very well. People going home at night and, well... How would I say, getting home at night? Because there were so few cars on the road, but the law was still against it. You still were not allowed to serve drink after a certain hour to people, and the people drinking at that hour, well, there was such thing as bona fide travellers, or as it was called, bona fide travellers. Now, you had to be a certain length from a pub, and then in the next pub to be served legally. No, that didn't stop people from taking the shortcut, of course. But what the police used to do, the RIC, of course, was that was the time. They had what was known as Gunther's Links, a chain, to measure around by the road to see was there a certain distance between what you had travelled between one pub and the next pub, just to make sure that you were within the law. Now, wouldn't you say, hadn't they little to be doing with that time? And of course, that was a time when crime was very, very low in the country. But if it was found that you were within the limit, you could be charged and arrested. So, that was bona fide travellers. That was another aspect of the law on the road at the time. If you were a bona fide traveller, you were fine. You could be drinking peacefully in the next pub. But if you weren't a bona fide traveller, you could be brought up for breaking the law, breaking the drinking laws. Now, there was more than that, of course. The next thing was... that I'll deal with, if I may, is the folklore of roads. Things met on the roads at night. Ghosts, for example. You might be walking along the road at night, going about your business, going home. And all of a sudden, something might join you. A person, for example, walk out a gap and join you. And you might say, as you would, as we're all Irish, say hello in a very friendly manner to them, salute them, no reply. And that'd put you thinking, what's wrong with this person? Now you'd first of all say, is he deaf? You're like, good, as I would, as you would. You've got two of the possibilities, is the man drunk or is the woman drunk or what else? But you try that three or four times, and if you were getting no reply, you begin to think, hold on a minute, now there's something wrong here. And more especially if it was a moonlit night and you could see the person clearly, and to be all the worse if the person was dressed in clothes that were of a different time. We'll say a bowler hat, if it was in recent years, or knee breeches, or, you know, if it was out of the time that we were in, or buckled shoes or something. And you were beginning to think, oh Lord God Almighty, what, you know, you might bless yourself superstitiously or surreptitiously, or, I wouldn't say superstitiously, sorry, wrong word, but if the person didn't disappear or go away at that, you were in trouble. But you'd keep talking as best you could, but hoping that you might come to a stream going across the road, and if you did, and if the person disappeared there, you might say, thanks be to God Almighty, and then you'd know that that person was from the other world, or was one of the good people, because, as you know, they can't pass running water. Now, if they had passed the running water, of course, you weren't too badly off, because, well, you'd know that you were reasonably safe, because at least you'd know it wasn't from the other world. It might be somebody trying to trick you, have a ha-ha laugh, because there was people long ago too having the bit of joke, you know, there was always those kind of people there, especially if you were a person that was a bit frightenable, we'll say. There was always those kind of people, but if the thing disappeared while there was water crossing the road, you were a lucky person, because that person was from the other world, or that thing was from the other world. So, I tell you, it was better, we'll say, as I said in a previous, program or a podcast, to carry something. Carry something with you that would guard you against things like that on the road at night. Carry a scapular, carry a black-handled knife, carry a holy medal, something like that. And remember, the two things didn't contradict each other, the black-handled knife and the scapular. Some people would say, hold on a minute, no. Something against the fairies and something holy. No. The two things didn't contradict each other at all in Ireland. The belief in the fairies and the belief in ghosts, no chance they didn't contradict each other at all, because people believed in the faith and in the other crowd equally well. No. Better have two or three different protections if you thought you had to pass a particular place where maybe something happened, where somebody met a violent death or something like that. It was better be prepared. Always. Now, for example, another thing. Pishogues. If you found pishogues, the sign of pishogues in your garden, for example, if you dug up raw meat, if you found that your crops weren't flourishing, and if you dug up eggs in your garden, if you dug up some raw meat in your haystack, what would you do with it? Well, sir, a dog wouldn't put eggs in your garden. Whatever about the raw meat? whatever about the raw meat. I often heard it said, oh, but couldn't a dog bury raw meat in your garden? Maybe, maybe, but a dog wouldn't bury eggs in your garden. That wouldn't happen. Just somebody put them there, and we all know about pishogues. My God, we do. I have had 101 different cases of pishogue. In fact, I'll have a book coming out on pishogues after I have finished my next two, because it's a book that needs badly to come out. I'll have that ready about in about a year and a half's time, because so many people have asked me and I have plenty of material about it. But it's a dirty, filthy business. But what would you do with it? If so, that dirty thing, if you found that in your garden and that your crops were failing and that your cattle were getting sick and that your own health was affected, what were you going to do with it? Well, I'll tell you what you do with it. You take it to a crossroads. The crossroads. The thing. And you leave it at the crossroads. Now, but wouldn't you be leaving the thing to other people, the bad luck? No, you would not. Because the bad luck, when you leave it at the crossroads, the piece of raw meat or the piece of the eggs or whatever, when it's left at the crossroads, the badness doesn't know which way to go. It doesn't know on whom to be bad, let's say, and the badness is scattered to the four winds. That's what the old people who knew about these things used to do. Take it to a crossroads, or the other thing they used to do was take it to a stream or a river that's flowing and let it off with the water. Let it off with the water and it'll go then and it'll affect nobody. I know today with all the things about pollution and everything else, that doesn't sound like a PC thing to do, but that's the way the old people used to say how to get rid of pishogues. Don't leave them where they are, because if, you know, bad-mindedness is a terrible thing. And to think that anybody would do that to a neighbour. I have 101, as I say, examples of that. But they were the two most common kinds. Eggs in your garden, or meat in your garden, or in your hay. They haven't gone away, remember. They're still being done to this very day. Now, another thing is, look at all the place names there are along roads in Ireland to show where people once lived that are long gone, especially crossroad names. O'Donnell's Cross, Tobin's Cross, Lenehan's Cross, we'll just say for example, Murphy's Cross. People very often, the names are died out, and yet the names in the crossroads have stuck there. A remarkable thing. And speaking of crossroads, isn't it awful strange that pubs and forges used to also be at crossroads? Look around you. Forges. Great, wonderful places where people used to collect from the four corners of the parish into a forge. And you'll find that all over Ireland. And many of them now abandoned. But still people used to find a refuge on a hot day in summer or on a cold day in winter, because the forge and the banging of the hammer and the fire, the blacksmith's fire, it was a beautiful place to gather. Just like as I say, the pub, when pubs used to have people in the middle of a day, long gone. No pubs have people in them now until the evening time. Everything has changed. But country pubs tended to be at crossroads in little villages too, or in small towns. So many towns had pubs at corners. And very often you had at the same crossroads, you had a pub here, a pub there, a pub here, and a pub there. A remarkable thing. Now, in many towns, there would only be room for one pub at that crossroads because the business isn't there, but obviously it was one time. Now, another thing, and I spoke of bridges a little while back. If I'm crisscrossing back and forward, let it, because don't bridges crisscross over rivers and roads crisscross over bridges? I often heard it said that when the black and tans were in the country and the troubles were on, the obvious thing, and when the Civil War, of course, followed that, the obvious thing, first of all, the obvious casualty, first of all, was the bridge. Bridges were blown up and broken down in order to disrupt the activity and the mobility of the black and tans, first of all, and then the Free State soldiers. And the black and tans, I was told, they specialised in one particular thing. They weren't going to get out of their Crossley tenders to fix the bridge. They were going in a certain way. What they used to do was, they'd round up the occupants of four or five houses nearby, and with the prodding of a bayonet or the butts of their rifles, they'd say, out, out, and get those people to fill in the stream or whatever it was, if it was a small river, and make them fill in the stream there and then so that they could cross that river. Oh, many and many a time I heard that story. They had no mercy, the tens. You filled it in, or you get a kick in the arse, or a belt of a rifle butt, or a prod of a bayonet in the backside, and you'd work there maybe all day. You wouldn't even be let eat. And they did that. They got any man that was there, and sometimes a woman or two as well. If she was big enough or fit enough looking, they'd get them and make them work. And no dinner, no nothing, until they had the bridge built up enough again for the Crossley tender to pass. I tell you, it was a risky business sometimes knocking the bridge, because you put work on the locals in order to let the tans pass on their journey. If they couldn't go back, if their barracks was only maybe a number of miles away, 10 or 11, 12 miles away, rather than go back and go around, you fixed up their bridge for them. That was that. So, now, the next thing I'd like to talk about to do with roads is, it's maybe a little bit stranger. The public road, put that in inverted commas, where it happens in folklore also, it belonged to nobody and it belonged to everybody. There are many stories in folklore that if you were benighted, if you at night went astray, for example, if you were coming home at night and if you stood on the ford in Marowil, the stray sod, and of course you could be after that standing on the ford in Marowil, you could be walking around like a fool for the rest of the night, not knowing where you were. And if by any hope you could, maybe you saw a light somewhere, and if you could, in terror, because I've heard of men who they knew where they were, but they couldn't get out, we'll say, of a small field, knowing where they were, but they had stood on the stray sod, and they told me if they could only find the public road, they were fine. They were fine. Once you could find the public road, you were safe. Now, a man told me that he was coming home one night from a game of cards, and he looked back and he saw this beautiful, beautiful house. It was like a landlord's house. And he knew there was no house there. He had been crossing that way for years and years and years, playing cards in the house he had been playing cards in. Now, brave man, brave man. Yes, he said, I must have a look at this. It was a lovely moonlit night. So, thank God he went back. There was lights lights in the windows, 3 stories high, beautiful house. The door was open. Now he was cautious, he was very cautious. And, will I go in? Now if the door was open, obviously they were expecting somebody. So he went to the door and peeped in. Not a sound. So he edged his way into the hallway and he saw ahead of him there were 3 or 4 doors on the left and 3 and 4 doors on the right and a big staircase at the end of the hallway. Beautiful staircase like you'd expect to see in a landlord's place. Hey God, he says. Didn't often I get a chance of having a look at a place like this. So he had been in landlords' domains, hunting rabbits and that, but he was never inside in one of the big houses. Thank God, he says, I'll chance it. He went in, now carefully, in case anyone would show up, inside or outside. He'd leg it. He'd go quick if he had any noise. And he looked in at the first door. It was open on the left. Beautiful room, but no one there. And the same on the right. Door was open, no one. Lovely furniture on the right, and the same at the second door on the left, the same at the second door on the right, third door on the left, third door on the right. Third door on the right. Good God, it looked like they were expecting. A feast, because there were the tables laid out like you'd see at a wedding. Tablecloths, beautiful food. Oh, God, Lord, he never saw the like of it. And he was just about to reach out and maybe, when he thought of something he had heard somewhere, don't touch. If you touch anything, any food, in a fairy place, whatever put the word fairy into his mind, if you touch anything in a fairy place, you'll never come out of it. So by God, he says, I better get out of here. And he did. Out he went. Out as quick as he could, before they might come back or come wherever they were coming from. And he legged it. Legged it out across the field and headed for the public road and made it. And once he was on the public road, he looked back. Nothing. There was the field under the moonlight. Nothing. By the Lord God, he says, was I dreaming? But he knew he wasn't dreaming because he could see what he had seen. All the stuff on the tables. All the stuff in the various rooms. By God, anyway, he headed for home. And the following day, he called to one of the houses near him, and there was an old man living there. Oh, he went back first of all to check where he had seen it, but there was nothing there, nothing. The field was empty. And anyway, he knew, because he had been in that field 100 times, crossing that way at night. And he asked the old man, he said, tell me, did you ever see a house there in that field? And the man asked him, why do you ask, he said. And he told him. Yes, he said, you must have a drop tuck last night. No, he said, all I drank was tea. We were down playing cards, and he named the house. No, he says, there was never anything there, or I never heard a story about anything being there. And I got, he says, I'm here for the last 75 years, and surely be to God, I'd have heard some story if there was a house there. All right, he says, all right, he says. So be God, that's what he told me. But he says, I saw a house there in that field. And when I look, he says, to come out of it when I did. So, to make the public road at night, you're a safe man, or woman for that matter. So, you are always safe, or not just on the public road, but between high tide and low tide also. Where nobody owns between high tide and low tide. And a story about that, which is historically true in the bad times, when landlords were, not all of them, but some of them, the rude people's lives. And back in West Clare, Father Meehan, the famous Father Meehan, he couldn't get a place to build a church from the local landlord back there in Moveen, way back in the little place, village of Moveen. And it wasn't much to ask, the site of a church. But at last, this is only the beginning of the 19th century, at last he struck on a plan. What would he do? Didn't he build a little church on wheels that he could say mass and give communion to the people at low tide? And that's what succeeded. And when the landlord saw that he was bait, what could he do except give the site meanness, pure meanness? And that little, the little ark, it is called today. You'll see it inside in Moveen Church, a tiny little, a little chapel on wheels. It is worth seeing. Tiny, tiny little, little church on wheels. The little ark is called. Go back sometime, you're in West Clare when all our present troubles are over, and you'll see it in Moveen Chapel. So it's worth considering these things. And I should say that there are so many of them, such as the Butter Road. The Butter Road on the way to Cork. I remember where I come from in Kerry, hearing from old people about the Butter Road, where people used to take their firkins of butter over the horse, one on each side, when they had no other income. And a dangerous, dangerous road it was. It took them two and a half days to get to the Cork market with their butter. And slavery, pure slavery. And when they'd get there, they get paid, you know, the butter would be augured, drilled down through it, and if the butter was of a certain quality, they'd get paid according to the quality, and that was fine. And then they had a 2.5 day journey home with their little bit of money. But the danger was when they'd be coming up by Nadd, and that'll tell you the name of the place, how high the place was. Nadd is still there, look at the map. But when they'd be coming back that way, highwaymen to rob them of their little bit of money. A dangerous, dangerous road was the Butter Road to Cork Market. And look at for example, fairy paths. Ah, sure, Lord, we could do another programme on this. Fairy paths were harmless, utterly harmless. Until you were cautioned about them. You could do what you like with a fairy path until you were told it was there. It was then you were in danger. If you built a house on a fairy path and meant no harm, no problem. But if you built a house on a fairy path knowing it was there, tough on you. You would have no peace in that house. And of course there was a way of finding out whether there was a fairy path there or not. And I'll tell people about that another time. And fairy paths ran in a straight line between fort and fort. And an old man told me one time that as well as being overground, fairy paths were sometimes underground. And sometimes the fairies came up, overground, and then went back down again. And why did they come up? They came up to have their contests, their fairy hurling matches or football matches between one group and another. And if you happen to be in the place, if there happened to be a human being in the place where they came up, then you'd be asked to join them in their game. Because remember, the fairies always need one human being to join them in whatever they're doing, be it a hurling match, football match, a dance, playing music, doing whatever they're doing, because they're like us in so many ways, but they always need a human being to do whatever they're doing. And if you're the one they choose, you better do it. If you do it willingly, you'll be rewarded. If you don't, bye-bye to you. You will be punished. Remember, they used to say, the Christy Ring, the wonderful hurler that he was, and Mick Mackey and other ones like that, Mick O'Connell and these, they used to be saying, half jokingly, oh yes, he was in the fairies. How could he be so skillful? He must have been in the fairies, because they stood out among that generation as being so phenomenal at their trade. But yes, at their trade, they were so wonderful as sportsmen. They must have been in the fairies. That was what people used to say about them. Where else would they get such wonderful skills that they had? But if you didn't oblige the fairies when they asked you, then there was terrible punishments that they could inflict on you. And the other side of that is soccer and rugby were never mentioned when the fairies came into the picture, because of course those games weren't there at all at that time. They were only imports. And finally, I should mention, of course, that there were funeral paths. Those kind of roads existed also. And if you blocked a funeral path, remember, a funeral path was a path that had been there for generations out of mind, from the time that funerals used to go across the land, where coffins were carried on people's shoulders, and I suppose before coffins, when people were wrapped up in a cloth just and carried on people's shoulders by the near way to the graveyard across fields. If you happened to block up one of those paths, well, then woe betide you. I know one of those funeral paths still in Ennis, and fair dues to all the builders, they have left that funeral path clear. It has not been built on, which is a good thing. It's a very good thing. And you'd hate to think that those things would not be respected, because they are part of our heritage in all their manifestations, be they roads, be they paths, be they fairy paths, be they wherever human beings, wherever people of this world, of the other world, of the next world, or whatever, have travelled. Those places, I think, they should be respected, because a day will come, remember, when even the motorways will seem outlandish, and people will look back and say, Lord, aren't they old-fashioned too? Because perhaps a day will come when, like the Star Wars thing, it'll be a case of beam me up, Scotty, and roads will no longer be even needed. And with that, good night, and thank you for listening. We're on the wrong road, maybe the wrong road, the right road, the road to God knows where.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.